Blog Talk Radio.
You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darryl, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Good evening, folks. This is the Grindhouse once again, August 17th, 2013, in the year of our Lord. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. As those who have listened to our broadcast before, this is a double feature broadcast with the Comic Shop first, and of course, After the Radio featuring Captain Kirk second at 7 p.m. So, without further ado, before we get into the pulp-flavored discourse, let's get into a quick nerdcore groove. This is MC Plus, Man vs. Machine. We'll be back in a few moments, and again, groove. Let's get ready to rumble!
MC Plus Plus, what are your statistics?
Go ahead, beat this into your heuristics. 1337, that's my vintage. 100%, that's my win percentage. Yo, Flo, you made a critical mistake. Turn on your mask, now you meet your fate. It's too late to undo, too late to go back. You got MC Plus Plus with this lyrical attack. My rap soul overflow your stack. Make your process overheat by the end of this track. You'll lack space and cash. Start cash, you make me want to laugh while your bits are flipping. Check your page table, but it's not able to find free frames going to the wrong label. All the while, I'll corrupt your file with this vicious flow and impeccable style. You can't compute, so you can't compete. So I'll defeat ya, it's nice to meet ya. You should know better than trying to school the teacher. Using very large words like titanium. Fours like titanium
to bash you in the cranium.
2-for-1, it's double data rate. Rising edge, falling edge.
Yo, I cover every state. See, your rhymes are predictable. No Turing test is applicable. Every creation takes on its creator.
Now I am the master.
Like Darth Vader, this is Max Flow taking on organic. Persian, Caucasian, Black or Hispanic. I rip fresh rhymes that into panic and take MCs apart like a rapper with panic. Coming at you with lyrics you need to respect. Catching all exceptions that you couldn't expect to be thrown. Please let it be known, MC++ has easily been overthrown. It's clear that Max Flow sits upon the throne. I can battle you alone, but it's well known that I have the capacity to clone my core. And for processes, then you can endure. In addition to launching my multiple modules, we have many defenses that exceed lymphatic nodules. We've mastered all sorts of slant rhymes and internals. Your diurnal limit.
Man vs. Machine by MC Plus. Folks, welcome to the Grindhouse. This is the Comic Shop. Feel free to give us a buzz if you'd like to join in with the with my own, our own podcast Avengers, our own podcast Enterprise crew. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. All right, let's just do the damn thing. Without further ado, let's get my my crew in. Of course, I have to get the captain in. Captain, it's your time. Let's get to it.
I seem to have some board control. It's a little slow, but some board control. Well, let's go.
Okay. All right. And And then, of course, we have the invincible Daryl B. Let's get right to it. Daryl, you there?
You're wrong. Yeah, it only took Fox Studios 14 years to right a wrong and get Chris Claremont to start commentating and consulting on your X-Men movies. A little too late.
You know what? Again, I see he's in a pleasant mood, full of zest and fire. How are you, Daryl? What's going on?
I'm not doing well. My Yankees are losing. Allison Felix ruptured her hamstring in the 200-meter race today. I'm doing just peachy. Let's get this started.
All right. Did you see, cause I saw it this afternoon, actually. I should say, let me correct that. I saw it this morning. I'm a morning guy with these movies, and it is a thing of beauty. No children, no chaos. You have to see these movies early in the morning. Anyway, I did get a chance to see Matthew Vaughn's Kick-Ass 2. Daryl, you up first. Did you see this thing?
Saw it. I kind of liked it better than one, but guys already know my Millar bias. I make no bones about it that I think he pans to the lowest common denominator. All right? But I will say this. I will say this with this movie. It was the same director of the first one, right? Going through.
That's true.
The thing that annoyed me in the second one was, and I think Comics Alliance's review had it spot on. This movie did not know what it wanted to be. It was like a hodgepodge of movies. Was it a gangster revenge flick? Or was it a Mean Girls type movie? Was it a movie about family bonding? Was it a movie? It was literally all over the place. But that being said, plot wise, I gotta say I like the action sequences. They were well choreographed. You know, Moretz is definitely the standout of this series. With the second place guy being McLovin, Mintz Plisse as the former friend now foe, those two are the standouts in this for me. Jim Carrey to me in this was a non-factor. I mean, he was kind of toned down compared to what Jim Carrey is. You know, I was kind of scared that he would go over the top, but just grabbed with age and wisdom, he played his part well. But again, to me, what was annoying about this, all right, was it didn't know what it wanted to be here. It really didn't. I mean, the undertones of comedy go straight through the film, but to me, it just didn't know what it wanted to be. I don't know if Captain got the same sense out of it, because I know Captain analyzes that better than I do, all right? Just real fast on that one. He has a sense for the plot. He has a sense for that. But me, I was like, okay, we're in the school. Now all of a sudden we're in the training session. All of a sudden she's trying to fit in for Poppy. And then all of a sudden she's just beating down kick ass. I'm like, make up your mind what movie you want it to be. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
All right. Listen, I enjoyed the movie. I'd say, I really had very little complaints because I thought that the movie's frame for frame was essentially the comic book. So I would question you, Daryl, as to this may be more on your bias against Mark
no,
Miller.
I didn't read the comic book.
Okay, well it's the comic book. Your complaint would have to be levied against the comic book because the comic book was almost, I'd say 95% of the movie was that comic.
Okay.
But
like I said, I got a Millar bias because I picked up Kick-Ass 1 and I never wanted to read it again because it was so overtly freaking against my morals and stuff. I'm not giving them money for that. But I went to see the movie because it's a comic movie. I can't talk about it without seeing it. And I tolerated one. I liked two better than one. But like I said, there was, to me, it was still incoherent to me with that. I just, like I said, growing up, everybody knows I love kung fu flicks. I love superhero flicks. So when it comes to fight scenes and stuff like that, that goes a long way for me. And this one, I will say, that's what put me over the top on this movie for between dislike and like. You know, it's just like that. But the same biases I have, this movie did nothing to dispel those.
Okay, this is where I diverge from your point, only in the sense, as I said before, it essentially took from the book. It might as well be perhaps the best adaptation of a comic book since Watchmen, in the sense of staying, not that it's an equivalent of Watchmen as far as like gravitas or social relevance or social resonance, but I mean as far as interpreting a comic book frame for frame, I want people to understand me clearly. I'm not saying it's of the same weight as The Watchmen, but as far as a comic book coming to life where it's literally frame for frame with how the action sequences and everything. It was – the only thing I was disappointed about – it's just kind of weird for me to say this, but you're so used to comic books being changed around by the suits that it's almost disconcerting to see a movie that's, oh, well, this is the comic book. I literally was turning the pages in my head as I was looking at this thing. That's why it's difficult for me to complain so much, because I keep on buying the book. And again, to our audience, this is Mark Millar, Scotsman, noted comic book creator, writer. He has done quite a few books of note, and he did Kick-Ass, Kick-Ass 2, and Hit Girl as comic books. So the whole premise of the book, premise of this story, is what would happen if comic book geeks, like yours truly, were to don a mask and actually become a Batman-like vigilante. So it has that surrealism. That's part of the comic book. The comic book is, if this is more real life, what goes down? So I think you're used to kind of going into these theaters with the sense of, this is fantasy, and your mind adjusts to that reality. This is more kind of guys, you know, in suits trying to fight, you know, street level criminals. So I don't see why you're confused by it as far as what it's trying to be. I mean, you know, you don't have villains flying around and shooting laser beams from their butts. So in this case, You have to fight gangsters.
I'm not confused about it. I'm just telling you, and an amendment to your list. If you don't include Whiteout and Road to Perdition on that list about frame for frame shots, then I find your list invalid. All right, but I digress on that. You know, I just said, like I said, I came into it like the mainstream came into it. I didn't read Kick-Ass 2. I didn't read Hit Girl, all right? Like I said, there's my bias coming in. But I have to watch it because it's a comic book movie and because we were going to be talking about it. And like I said, in my uncultured opinion, unlearned opinion there, it was an okay movie, all right? But to me, I'm looking at the plots and everything, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, this movie does not know what it wants to be. All right? Maybe that was the same way in the comic book. But if you tell me, hey, D, you got to go read that book, I will tell you hell no. And again, I told you, I've been consistent on this fact. When I picked up Kick-Ass 1, its depiction of females and minorities turned me right off the book. Like, what the is this? They're like, this is culture grabbing. This goes against everything I've preached about on this dang show with all of the damn stereotypes. and I never
all
picked
right.
up another book here again.
Well,
Captain, you didn't see this, correct?
I didn't see it. So I really can't weigh in.
We made
great radio.
I see that Daryl B wants to channel Spike Lee. Anyway, not seeing a movie, but having
channel
a book.
I have to be truthful, right? I have to be truthful. When picking up way back with Kick-Ass, what? Every time you bring up Kick-Ass and how well you like it, I stay mum on it. I say I can't comment on it because this franchise has turned me off. Just like in a current blog I put up, I say I can't comment about Justice League's Trinity War or whatever. Why? I haven't picked up the books. I haven't wanted to pick up the books. Right? So I ask,
okay.
Hey, anybody out there says that I should be reading it, tell me why. Give me good reasons. Because on the outside looking in, I don't want to touch it. That's why. I only saw this damn movie because I knew we would be talking about it on the show.
All right, hold on. Two things. One, you know that Mark Miller has been approved, or his script has been approved for Secret Service with Sam Jackson. Did you like Secret Service? Did you read that?
Mark Millar. I haven't touched it. Again,
all right.
I'm telling you.
He's being truthful. He has a legitimate bias.
Yeah, okay. Hold on. We got time here. We got to kind of cut things quick here. What about the money element? And then we're going to go to something else. Made about $5 million thus far. The last one made about $7.5 million. These movies are cheap. It was like $28 million to make this movie and $30 million to make the last one. Do you think it's going to be able to recoup its money? Or, you know, what do you think is going to happen? It's like number three, I think. I think The Butler is actually making money. What do you think about the monetary aspect of it?
If it recoups its money, then there's going to be a third. Just because the fans have wanted R-rated type superhero genres has been going to see this. All right, I'm not saying it's not possible, but I'm saying, hey, if you're asking me to go against my senses, I am not going to do that. I've picked up his stuff in Ultimates. I picked up his stuff with The Authority. But when it comes to this franchise, all right, it turned me off to Mark Millar. I will tell you that truthfully. It turned me off. Unless it was a property that I feel an allegiance to, such as when he did his Fantastic Four run, you know, where I could look at the characters and not see the Millar speak, okay. But, hey, when it comes to Kick-Ass and stuff, you know what? Other people can support it. I'm supporting another book.
All right. Folks, again, this is The Grindhouse featuring myself, D. Burt, Captain Kirk, and, of course, the last person you just heard speaking, Daryl B. Let's move along because of the time constraints. What about this revelation, whether it's true or untrue, about Christian Bale perhaps being offered $50 million to reprise his role as the Dark Knight for the upcoming Man of Steel 2, Batman versus Superman? What do you think about that reality? I mean, they were asking for someone late 30s, early 40s. Like, well, you know what? He's kind of already there. What are your thoughts about it? Do you think it actually happened? What's going on?
Let's
go to the captain.
Captain
on this one.
As I said on previous shows, what we were talking about, getting the different type of Batmans. And I said, I really don't have an input directly because you don't know what direction that these individuals really want to go in. They say one thing and then you get something else. And then I also said, you take Christian Bale in a back room, work him over, and said, here's a big sum of money and do the movie. That's what you do. Stop with all of this foolishness and just do the movie. Lo and behold, all of a sudden now, they're talking about $50 million for Mr. Christian Bale. Listen, Christian, you would be nuts. You'd be totally off your rocker. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, The Shining, and every other thing type of movie that where someone went crazy if you didn't take the money. Just take the money and do the movie. Don't be worried about being typecast. Robert Downey Jr. is still making other movies. It doesn't matter. Get the bag of money and give the people what they want. Let's get it going. It's a sure in to make $1 billion if he's in. You could pay all kinds of money to these actors because it's going to happen. You are going to make the money. This is the closest thing to a win-win situation. There's no such thing as just, you know, a sure thing, but it's the closest thing as you can get. We're bringing him in. Let's go. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
Yeah, you know, we're not talking about George Reeves here. George Reeves never won an Oscar. So, I mean, that whole argument about him feeling like he's been typecast, he's already done some iconic roles. And he's not, and you know, I just thought of this. He can't be afraid of strict pop culture fluff. If people were to consider this that. Although, since, you know, Dark Knight's gone into different territory, actually. Dark Knight has gone into different territory. I don't think it's perceived that way necessarily, but if one were to make the argument that this is pop culture fluff, he's done it before. He did it with the Terminator movie. So we know that he's full of FOS, as to the kind of movies he will do. He will do independent films. He wants to act. He's got an Oscar. There's nothing else to prove. He's done other work. He can't be typecasted at this point. The only thing is that he was kind of poo-pooing on this thing, but then he leave a door open still with him working with Nolan. He likes Nolan so much that if Nolan approached him again with something, that maybe he might pursue it. I don't know the validity of this revelation. They're saying that it came out of some book or something. Someone wrote a book about Warner Brothers, and something was revealed, but we don't really know just how accurate it is that he was indeed approached by Warner Brothers with a $50 million offer. Daryl, what do you know about this, and what do you think about even going in this direction with Christian Bale?
As I said before, I'm going to shock people. You know what? This is the right move for Warner Brothers. This is the right move because this is the Batman people are familiar with. All right? This is the current Batman. This is the Batman that revitalized the movie franchise. It is the right move. To Mr. Christian Bale, all right? I got two names for you. All right? Just sit back and just take this in. Samuel Jackson, Robert Downey Jr. Samuel Jackson, his original contract was about, $20 million for 5 Marvel films, and through all the sales and the DVD portion of his contract, all right, he has grossed about $60 million from the Avengers films, and he wasn't a big part of the Avengers films. And when I say Avengers films, people, I'm talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, of course. For all of that, for the portions of the DVD, he grossed about $60 million. All right, but he isn't a headliner. So let's look over to Robert Downey Jr. For the Iron Man films, for Avengers, for the bit parts he made in other films, connected and other shorts connected, he had a $40 million contract. And he's grossed somewhere around $120, $130 million. And he now is saying he wants to walk away and Mark Wahlberg has put his hat in the ring because Mark Wahlberg's intelligent. Even if he does one Iron Man movie and he's in the head role, he's going to continually get money in perpetuity. Why? Because fans will keep on buying it. Now, let's go over to Superman Batman, or Batman Superman. Fans have wanted this for years because it's close to what JLA is, right? Or it's the beginning box of JLA. If this movie gets any sort of traction, it's going to make $1.5 billion. Okay? I'm telling you that straight up. I've said this for years as a Marvel zombie. I have told folks for years. I love Marvel to death, but DC's got the more recognizable icons. if you give me a quality movie out of pairing up DC Heroes and giving me the Hope to LA, there is no way that movie is not going to make at least $1 billion. And if you give me a quality JLA movie, it's going to make $2 billion. And when compared to that, $50 million, it's a drop in the bucket, Christian. But just take a look at what you're going to get in the future if you get a Seinfeld deal. And for the folks out there, a Seinfeld deal is essentially the actors of Seinfeld held out on one of their final seasons to rework their contracts so that they got higher pay per episode, but also they got DVD rights. So anytime you buy a DVD, anytime it's shown on television and reruns and stuff like that, they get a percentage. Now, it's not a big percentage, but if it's replayed and rebought and resolicited again and again and again and again, those 1 cent, 5 cent, 10 cent of a dollar stuff, those add up. So that essentially, Seinfeld never has to work again. None of those actors have to work again. They will be getting money in perpetuity for the rest of their lives. Hey, that's what Samuel Jackson's getting. That's what Robert Downey Jr. is getting after the Marvel franchise. Then again, extrapolate that to DC, and again, they're more iconic. There are people today still buying Batman back movies. There's people today still buying Superman back movies just from their symbols. That thing, that money is never going to dry up. Christian, use your head. $50 million, but then you're going to get at least $1 million to $2 million per year for the rest of your life without having to lift a finger. Who's going to argue with that? Evidently, Christian Bale is. If rumors are true. Back to you,
Alfred. All right, well, my only thing about this is, no, my only concern is, okay, Does he at this point also trap himself with the Justice League franchise? Like, if he does, I mean, from my understanding, this discussion kind of includes Man of Steel 2 and JLA 1. Now, the reality is, this guy with fitness regimen, with nutrition, 39, is the way things are nowadays. He could be in his early 50s. And still be in that suit, if he had to. I mean, heck, I'm cutting him off early because you see Liam Neeson's in his 60s, and he's a new action star more or less. So, I mean, you could, you know, we see the guys from the 80s, the Stallones and the Schwarzeneggers. They're still trying to. God bless Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis is in his 50s. And he's still playing John McClane.
Okay, Afro-Nerd, let me just hit you back with your logic here and just think about this, right? You are trapping yourself in a suit chained to two movies that at their worth are going to make $2.5 billion. Just think about this. You are chaining yourself to a suit. I'm using their words, chaining to, folks don't get offended, all right? $2.5 billion. Unless these are Roger Corman Z-list bombs, you are getting at least $2.5 billion gross for these two movies put together, all right? And like I said, we don't know the fine workings of the deal. He would, his management team would be morons not to get DVD things, all right? And you're getting $50 million guaranteed on top, and money for coming to you for the rest of time down the line without raising a finger. All right, you consider that a travesty? I'll take $50 million and $1 million each year.
Well, hold on. The way this has been written so far, people are analyzing this, and they're saying that Christian Bale, you know, listen, we know he's an actor. We're not going to take anything away from his acting prowess. But he's also a shrewd businessman. And these actors always pretend that they're disinterested in order to get more money. And at the end of the day, why is Nolan even in the mix with any of this stuff? That's another thing, too. Like, you know, Nolan has no problem attaching his name to these projects. Because Nolan will tell you, well, I'm done with Batman. Well, if you're done with Batman, why are you attached to Superman then, per se? Why are you attached to this genre? So even he's still doing the movies he wants to do. What's the next movie coming out now, Daryl, that's heavily talked about?
Which one?
It's the next movie that Nolan's doing. It's another movie that Chris Nolan has heavily talked about, because he's almost an auteur at this point. He's pretty much an auteur right now.
Well, what's the reason? More money. I've made my money from Batman. My name is out there now. I've made my money from Inception. My name is out there now. I put up crap, and I have legions of blind followers that will go and see it. But I don't make crap. I'm going to put movies out there that keep me alive. Why is no one attached to this? More money. Exactly.
All right, let's go to a musical break. I guess my only concern before we go to the break is this going to be the same Batman to fight this god from outer space? You know, we've never really seen... I mean, the thing that would make this interesting is that this Batman, maybe we could explore... Because that's something that's been missing from Bale's portrayal of Batman, is this the deductive reasoning, the mind power, his ability to outthink his opponent and to be 5-10 steps ahead. And also the fact, because any of that stuff that happened in Dark Knight, the last one, Dark Knight Rises, the fact that, you know, he left Gotham, the fact that Commissioner Gordon knows who he is. I mean, you know, the whole thing, how does that fit in with him being Bruce Wayne? Bruce Wayne's supposed to be dead. I guess he died under mysterious circumstances, so he can return to Gotham. Because we've seen that in comic books, too. So I guess, is there room from The Dark Knight Rises for the Bruce Wayne character to return back to Gotham? Can he do that?
He's alive, right?
He's
alive, right? It's a comic book movie, right? Anything is possible.
Yeah.
Come on, use your imagination. The problem is with Hollywood, they never use their imagination.
Duly noted.
Right. Are you talking about Interstellar? That movie?
Yeah, that's it. Interstellar, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. All right. Quick Nerdcore groove. And then when we get back, I want to talk about Watson and Holmes, the African-American version. Your thoughts when we get back. This is Old Man Logan, Adam Warrock. Be back in two.
My skin is thick and my skeleton's adamantium. My claws are sharp when I'm brandishing. Berserker rage is beneath the surface that I'm handling. Some past demons I'm battling. Life beats like Catalan. Older than most of these young rap cats. That's why I got a lot more just to talk about. And yes, I'm turning 32 with something to laugh at. Guess I've seen a lot of things in my past that only made me stronger but colder inside. And so I got the flannel shirt that keeps the warmth close to mine. And I got some gray hairs, some wrinkles in time. It's like the rings of a tree telling the story of mine. Yeah, age with wisdom, love and understanding. But I'll kill you if you fuck with me and my fam friend. Don't let appearances fool, cause I move slow and the beat is at rest. And you don't know how bad I am in the flesh. About time we did something nerdy, right? You got 24 hours, let's do this. Come on. They call me Old Man Logan. Alright, I got the lowered expectations. In a fight, cause I'm a samurai. X-Man, killer inside. So don't let the the grown man shit. Fool you, young child. Man, y'all are just Teen Titans, Avengers Academy. I'm the teacher with the syllabus. Jean Grey School for gifted and talented mutant beings in their anatomy. X-Gene, y'all best to follow the rules. And I treat my women with respect. Mariko, I'm old school in the flesh. Calico, the school's upstate New York. Oswego, I drink tequila when I'm at rest. Amigo,
yeah.
Weapon X programming inside of my brain that causes animalistic mannerisms when I be handling this. They like you mad, bro, I'm like we ain't brothers. And you can slice my sword, I only recover. Healing factor since you reeling after the bleeding. That's all of your energy in a fight. I'm a bad motherfucker, can't you see? And you fuck with the Wolverine, you get the claws right in your face. Cause shit is over when you give me a taste.
Hey yo, I ain't no spring chicken, but like, you know, that matter, right? Come on.
They call me Old Man Logan. Alright, I got the lowered expectations. In a fight, cause I'm a samurai. X-Man, killer inside. So don't let the grown man shit fool you, young child. And someday this will all make sense. And someday this will all make sense. And someday this will all make sense.
Apologies for the expletives. Sometimes I forget that some of this music, as good as it is, they might have some curse words here and there. Again, that was Adam Warrock, Old Man Logan, which is a direct reference to Wolverine and the great comic book series entitled Old Man Logan. Are they going to revisit that again, Darryl? Is there going to be an Old Man Logan 2?
I don't know. That again, that's a Millar book right there that I picked up on the strength of Wolverine. But hey, you know what? Don't apologize for the cursing, because the major complaint everybody had with the Wolverine was they wanted an R-rated version of Wolverine, right? Handle the language, people.
You know what? I'm not going to touch that. I thought that. You've got me so on pins and needles with your Millar issues that I, in the back of my mind, I think Old Man Logan is Miller, but let me not mention it. The Miller.
No,
I thought it was Miller.
Millar.
Huh?
It's Millar.
Oh, Miller. Okay.
Oh,
all
you
right.
Say Miller. No problem with that. Let's go.
Well,
I told you
right.
guys I wasn't happy. Here we go.
All right, I see.
Let's go.
All right,
Watson.
Let's go to something that might make you happy, sort of. This goes back to This goes back to an issue that's very thematic with Afro Nerd. And with the comic shop in particular, with new adaptations, whether it's in films, you know, cinema, and in comic books, where they replace these old time, and they've lasted forever, old time intellectual properties with black faces. So now we have a new book. I think it's at issue number 3 now. I think 3 just came out by New Paradigm, the comic book company New Paradigm, and it's called simply Watson and Holmes. But it's a black Watson and Holmes, a modernized Watson and Holmes, not unlike Sherlock in the UK and Elementary here in the States. And Watson is a female, and she's of Asian descent. So I guess what took so long for there to be, if you want to look at it that way, a Watson and Holmes. Now, I ordered this thing off of eBay. I didn't get it yet. I know that it must be garnering a great deal of interest because that's a lot of money for Watson and Holmes number 1. So, Darryl, what do you know about this? I think it's. I think I might have seen $50 to $100 already.
Oh man. Okay.
You still get it cheaper. You have to look around, but I've seen people asking a lot for number 1.
Well, I will say it like this. It's one of those books that didn't get widespread appeal, didn't get like things put out. But I'm always the one of the paradigm. Why can't we have a book like this? Can't we? Why can't there be black protagonists who use their brains over brawn? Why can't there be black protagonists that do detective work? You know, We're not tied down to anything. The one thing I've always been consistent on is that in the realm that we analyze and we break down and we get sensationalistic about right here, it is infinite. There is anything can happen when we're talking about this. Anything can happen as long as you put a mind to it and you got a good plan. You can have any book, any character, any paradigm. So, hey, Watson Holmes, modern day, black detectives, it's possible. It's great. We wanted to end stereotypes, all right? My only problem with this is that this book hasn't been talked about more because until you brought it up, I didn't know about it. I'll tell you the truth. I did not know about this book. I did my research on it. And you know what? This needed to be talked about a little bit more, but not in the greater comic book community. This needed to be talked about in our community. All right? But again, there's a faction out there. I don't like black people playing white roles, or I it's not realistic to me. So it's not realistic to you to have a smart black man, a highly intelligent black man, wanting to do good and solve crimes. It's not realistic to you that a black man can use their brain instead of using their fist. I'm gonna knock this beep beep out. Oh, this is how I'm gonna solve the crime. No, this is how I'm gonna solve the crime. I'm gonna look at the forensics. I'm gonna do some backtracking on the thing. I'm gonna get enough evidence together to finally pin this jerk. That's how I'm gonna solve this crime. That's not realistic to you. Some people need to get a grip. Back to you, Alpha Nerd.
May I chime
All right,
in?
You know, yeah, sure.
I think it was wise on their part taking a historically white character and then making them black. Now, follow me on this, because it will cause attention. Later on down the line, I would love to see if this is successful, and hopefully it is, you have spin-off type characters that are just actually black with their own base. And I understand the fact that you need to create attention. So it's good in this case here. A lot of times we complain about, we'll say, and all of us will say this from time to time, that we need to just have our own characters. But if we make our own characters directly, sometimes, or should I say a lot of times, they won't get their attention. So I think this is wise at this given point. But down the line, it would be nice to have spin-offs that are just straight black characters, just made up. You know, that's what I like to see. Also, I like the fact that they made Watson 6'3", 225. You know, they're in Harlem. Come on, you gotta have a little size on you. You gotta deal with these feral beasts. You know, so that's good. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Hey, you took it to the role. Afro Nerd is Holmes and Captain Kirk is Watson. You got to do this. You don't go anywhere else. I've always said I'm the supervillain of the group. I could be Moriarty real easy. Let's put it that way.
This is already taking place. I'm on a mission. This is already taking place, even as we speak.
This is true.
This is what the show's about.
True.
Us against him.
Yep.
And the battle of common sense and logic. Yes. All right, listen. Watson Holmes, I mean, obviously I've bought into this thing because I can't wait till it comes in the mail. And also I want to get a hold of it before it becomes beyond my control as far as money's concerned. I was shocked to see this thing going for this money as it has. It seems to be garnering a great deal of attention. It's something about this is almost an Afro-nerd subject, but it's something about being black or a black version of something that piques the interest of the populace. I don't know, it's weird curiosity, I don't know what it is, but you color your heroes, and it's interesting. Now, we've seen this before, we've seen it in cinema millions of times. The Honeymooners, which was a crap of a movie, But they had to make them black. Just I don't know. In some way we want to believe that if you colorize a hero, especially if it's a white protagonist, that it radicalizes it. Doesn't necessarily have to be the case, but I think
you know, what Darryl was talking about was very important. And so what we, this is what we practically preach here at the Comic Shop and at Afro Nerd by extension. We preach the concept of expanding our minds, of perhaps looking at heroes, putting some African-American, some brown and black and yellow faces, just because the world is becoming this way. I guess my only concern is the originality of it. We know that Russell Simmons, we didn't really talk about it in depth, but Russell Simmons has his Harlem Shadow animated effort. Now, Russell Simmons is going to be on the grill in the next segment because of his foolishness with Harriet Tubman and making some. This man is on some kind of narcotic, obviously, because he lambastes Don Lemon 1 minute, saying that Don Lemon is delusional. Let me repeat that: saying that Don Lemon is delusional, and then he proves Don Lemon right. But within a week, within 72 hours, he proves this man right for putting out a beloved historical figure, a heroine, and has a sex tape on this woman, or as some kind of joke. The joke falls completely flat. So he comes. So now he has this Harlem Shadow, which is essentially a black shadow. The shadow pulp figure, it colorizes that shadow, and it's also in Harlem, just as Watson and Holmes are also in Harlem. So, I mean, I don't know what to think. You know, I don't know if we're moving forward or if we're regressing. I don't know.
Well, I will say this, and now I'm going to give credit to Mark Millar. I've seen an instance of this actually happening. Mark Millar on his Authority run had something with Jenny Fox, believe the heroine, and she, or giving her history. And essentially, throughout her history, all right, he put Jenny Sparks in a variety of roles, because Jenny Sparks in Authority was essentially a child of the millennium. So she was long-lived with electrical powers, all right? So she essentially lived through various points of this world's history from 1900 to 2000. And in its place, he put her in roles similar to Buck Rogers, similar to Sam Spade, similar to even a Jimi Hendrix type role, all right? Where she is living through these lifetimes as the same person, but showing different facets of the personality. Why do I bring this up? Because this is essentially what I'm thinking from this Watson and Holmes. You're showing a different facet of a black crime fighter, a black hero, you know, where it's not all brawn. It's not all stereotypes. All right? People just got to get it through their head that there's different ways to be a hero. Yes, we like seeing people use their fists, but there are some of us out there that love seeing heroes use their brains. I'm a big Columbo fan. I'm a big Monk fan. Did those guys ever fight? No. They used their brains to catch you. They went, okay, yeah, all right. That's what you're saying? Okay, so how'd you leave this at the scene? Name one black actor role that's ever done that. This is why I hope this gets big. I hope Watson and Holmes gets big, because like the captain said, it may inspire more roles, characters like this. And that's something we black fans need. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
All right, let me go to the chat room. Our friends there, we see that Kavina Man is with us. He's referencing the Kick-Ass movie. He says, I enjoyed the movie. It was not the best, but it was good. I would rather see a Hit Girl movie than a Kick-Ass 3. Well, you know, actually, Kick-Ass 2 was a combination of both. Kick-Ass 2 was really a combination of the Kick-Ass 2 comic and the Hit Girl comic. So you kind of got your wish with what we just saw this weekend, Kavina. And Kim Success, she says, no, I am not into blackening characters. Create new ones and do the work to market it. I'm with you on that, Kim. But at the same time, I will say, well, hold on, Daryl, 1 minute. I will say this. I will say this much. I think that, listen, I'm with you on that, Kim. I would probably lessen up on the critique of blackening characters if they were going to radicalize the depiction, make it completely different. When we think of House is an interpretation of Sherlock Holmes. First of all, just the wordplay, House and Holmes. House had a drug problem, just like Sherlock Holmes is a drug problem. I mean, you can look this up. House, it was an interpretation of Sherlock Holmes, except it took place in a medical hospital. He was a doctor as opposed to detective. I mean, there was things going on there, but it was still different with shadows of Sherlock Holmes. But it was definitely referencing Sherlock Holmes. If you're going to do a minority-based character or a woman in its place, be radical about it. You know, use it as a reference point, then go somewhere else with it. That would pique my interest. But just putting someone in a role that was historically white, that's kind of corny. We see that Blair Underwood is going to be Ironside next season. I mean, I hope he's just not Raymond Burr with a tan. And I'm a big supporter of Blair Underwood. Big supporter. Very clean cut, polished black actor. So I'm assuming he's going to bring something different to the role. But they need to make this stuff radical. Just don't change the actor's race, and then let that be the end of it. Then you might have me interested.
Okay, and to Kim saying that's all well and good. Again, we've had black cinema. All right, we've had black literature. Name the breakout hit. Name the thing that we have supported behind that isn't stereotypical. We have supported behind and raised to a new level because of our support. That's the problem. You kind of need that foot in the doorway there to get in. You know, but you know what? This is all moot in the long run, because you know what? Star Trek: The Next Generation did this already with Data and Geordi as Holmes and Watson. You know, and no one was outraged to have LeVar Burton play Watson, because on the show it made sense. Why? Because LeVar Burton wasn't written as a stereotypical black man. You could see someone with heavy intellect playing Watson off of the android Data's Holmes. Okay, with this book, essentially, it's two black characters who are intelligent. They're not brawny. Sure, Watson is more prone to getting into fights than Holmes is, but that's the one of the sides of everything this. When he gets more involved in physical education. What am I saying? Is if we want to give original characters and stuff like this a chance, there is nothing wrong, as Captain said, with using this as long as while the flip's in the door, you bring up more intelligent original characters that can get a basis in. That's all we want. Give us ours.
All right, because you're kind of breaking up a little bit there, Daryl. That's all right. Let's move on to one more thing, because we've got about 6 minutes remaining. So time is of the essence. And also to the captain. Captain, are you up on your boards? Because when I go to the outro, will you be able to follow through? Are you up on the boards to do that? If not, you know, I'll have to do it by myself.
Is Cap there?
He's there.
Uh-oh.
I see him. All right.
Yeah, this is going to be fine.
All right, hold on. Okay, well, let's move to the next topic, and Captain will come in.
All right, I'm here now, because the board froze, just as you said that. It was like that. Was put on. The board froze.
Apple Nathan
All right, I'll handle the outro. I'll handle everything going into the next show. We got about 5 minutes. quickly, more on casting. What about Bryan Cranston, who we know from Breaking Bad? There's more and more talk about him portraying Lex Luthor. It's not that he can't do it, that's for sure. Matter of fact, he's been doing it. He's been, when the suggestion comes up, he's been very funny, very coy about it. I think he tweeted something to Warner Brothers or something that, or somebody. He said something about, Lex Luthor is a great, he's a sweet guy. He's just misunderstood. It was caused laughter. So you already know. He's a sweet guy. He's just misunderstood. You already know he knows what's going on. He knows how to do this. I mean, he plays a maniacal thinking meth dealer on Breaking Bad. So it's not that far of a stretch. He can shave his head down. He can do the role. I mean, in a way, I could kind of see him as him or Daniel Day-Lewis, Daniel Day-Lewis would really be, whew. But I can't take anything away from Cranston either. That's one element that's out there. And also there's, of course, we're hearing that Vin Diesel may be the voice of Groot for the upcoming Guardians of the Galaxy movie coming out in 2014.
That would be good.
Captain, what are your thoughts on these ideas out there now?
I think Vin Diesel playing Groot would be very good. I think that's very good. You know, I'm up in the air with as far as Lex Luthor. Still up in the air with that. But I think Vin Diesel's situation would be very good. Put that strong voice to work. Let's go. Because his movie coming out in September looks weak. Okay, it looks very weak based on that trailer right now. All right?
what movie is that?
Well, come on now. What was he known for? What was Vin Diesel known for? Vin Diesel?
Oh, you're talking about Pitch Black.
Yeah.
I saw the trailer. I don't know. I thought the trailer was all right. Daryl, what do you think about? I mean, the trailer I saw this morning. I don't know. I didn't dislike it.
The trailer to me is okay, but honestly, I'm going to it for the strength of Starbuck and Batista. Outside of that, Vin Diesel, take or leave. I'm going to see how well two of my heroes die in this. Because everybody's dead except for Riddick at the end of this movie, too. That's it. It's essentially Pitch Black 3. Chronicles of Riddick, who survived? No one. Pitch Black, who survived? No one but Riddick. So that's it. As far as the news goes, hey, I love Cranston as Lex Luthor. Why? Because if you saw the first episode of Breaking Bad this season, all I was saying is, you know what? That is a perfect Lex Luthor if Lex Luthor was a meth dealer right there. You know, right there. It's amazing how I've gone from sympathy and loving Cranston from that 70s show to utter hatred of him in Breaking Bad. And guess what? You need that. You need that hateful charisma for a Lex Luthor type. Bring it on.
He was in that 70s show?
Not that 70s show. I mean Malcolm in the Middle. My bad.
Yeah. Okay. And imagine Vin Diesel's simple payday to say, I am Groot all day. That character.
I am Groot. There it is. You only have to pay me like $100.
I am Groot.
There it goes.
For the uninitiated, because we got about a minute, Groot is a member of the Guardians of the Galaxy who's essentially an anthropomorphized tree. it's a living, walking, moving tree that speaks.
And
but
best only friends
says,
with Rocket Raccoon.
But he only says, I am Groot. Groot. Go figure. So for him to be paid in perpetuity for saying, I am Groot, I can't say anything. I am foolish for me. I can't believe it. All right, gentlemen. Dow is always festive, fiery. We'll do it again next week. I didn't get a chance to hear what you think about Elysium, so we'll talk about that next week. Folks, prepare yourselves for Avner featuring Captain Kirk up next.
And Miles Morales next week, too.
Spock with a beard?
I think not. I'm crazy.
Mayhaps I could have got away on beef for you catching me. You remember that. You remember that all, eh? You killed me. You remember that. You killed me. Niggas like you just prove what the Peckerwoods say. We're just beasts. Willing to do anything. Kill each other. No mind. No feeling.
Shut up, nigga.
Leastwise, I ain't gonna die like you gonna die. Like a slave. I ain't giving no lifetime of misery and sweat to this Peckerwood. I'd rather die than be a slave. You Peckerwood. That's right. You Peckerwood was oppressed in your own land. We was free. And you brought us here. In chains. Well, now we here. And you just better know. This is just as much our land as it is yours. And after you hang me, kiss my ass.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funkin' lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bus, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
You know, folks, sometimes I liken to what we're doing at the Grindhouse to something like a band, where the Comic Shop essentially is the lead guitarist and Afro Nerd comes in as the bassist. So this is the bass groove going on now. This is the second half of the Grindhouse, folks. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Of course, the captain is coming up in a few moments. He's waiting in abeyance. That was from 1975's Mandingo, which is available on Blu-ray. I would suggest you get it. It's something. I think it's our friend Sergio Mim's favorite films, or one of his favorite films. Let's go to a quick groove, folks. We have a lot to get into for the hour. This is something new. I cannot get away from this groove, folks. This is an infectious groove. I really dig it. This is Relations. Relations, an Ode to You and Me by Kenna. We ride back, and you know the word. It's groove. That's groove. We ride back.
Relations, you and me.
dancing and grooving. It's not a good thing to play groove and funk before I get into the discourse because it gets me hyped. Again, Kenna, an ode to you and me, relations, check it out. Matter of fact, it's available, I think, for download at our Facebook page. So definitely go to our Facebook if you want to check out that cut. Kenna, an ode to you and me, relations. Okay, let's get into the discourse, folks. I got to bring in my partner in White Collar Crime. This is the captain. Captain, it's your time. You're needed on the bridge. Get away from Rigel 3 with those wayward Negroes. There's no helping them, so let me beam you up. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
You heard the mix there, right? It was a mix. It seems like the board comes back for this show. It's the other show they don't like me on.
It's not you. It might be Daryl B's influence causing havoc. Who's to say? Who's to say? All right, folks, listen, this is the Grindhouse. This is part two. We have a lot to cover, actually, this evening. Folks, feel free to jump on in. The water is always a nice, balmy 70 degrees, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. You know, Captain, I cannot wait. Just an FYI for our audience, we probably will not have a broadcast next Saturday because I'm going to be at the Afropunk Festival, and I will report on what I have seen the following show. So that should be interesting. I just cannot wait for this thing. A lot of great acts, something different. I feel like I'm more myself. I'm not a pretender, but I just feel like I'm just absolutely more comfortable around this particular event, just as I would be at the comic book convention, which is also coming up soon. So
let's call it spade.
You're around like-minded folks.
Let's call it spade a spade. You don't like menstrual activities. That's it.
Yes.
You're
right.
Call it spade.
Hemming and hawing. Hemming and hawing. You're correct, sir. There's a different kind of black at these events. The women are comely, not homely, comely, shapely. Actually, I didn't see any weird Caucasian hair hats. Didn't see it. I did not see anyone wearing a Caucasian hair hat. I saw all the various shades of blackness at this event. People were more natural based. They were fit. You know, I don't know, man. that minstrel stuff is a big thing. I should mention this quickly. I'm all man, Captain. but I will go to the manicurist because I'm just about that. I'm about grooming. And plus, to be perfectly honest, I've gotten compliments from my hands from ladies. So once they started picking up on that, couldn't stop it. Could not stop it. So when I went earlier today, after I saw Kick-Ass, the Kick-Ass 2 film, and then I went to the manicurist, I'm surrounded by heavy-set African-American women. Everybody is just 100 pounds overweight. I'm looking at bulbous toes next to mine. Huge bulbous feet. So there's no way that my man feet should be more attractive than your female feet, but they were. And I was troubling. There was one woman in there that I thought would say, okay, semi-attractive. Semi. But she was lower tier, Captain. She wore a midriff. Her midriff was exposed, and her sloppy belly was exposed. If you're going to wear a midriff without having that lower tier edge, you better have a cut-up stomach. Just if you're going to expose your stomach, it has to be a six-pack or an eight-pack, Captain. Wouldn't you agree? For it to come off better.
It has to be flat. You have to have a flat stomach.
Oh, was it? her body was all right, but then I saw tattoos on the thighs. I mean, this is everywhere. All I saw was obesity and tattoos and bad feet. Now, when Don Lemon talks about this stuff about in Harlem and garbage being thrown around and refuse, people look at him like he's delusional. I have seen the same thing. I've seen our own folk, if you're going to be tribal, with the garbage just tossing it around like it's no big deal. And again, I saw obesity and tattoos, but I can't say anything. I can't say anything. Captain, we're going to probably do some kind of cybergenics next week or next couple of weeks. I don't know if Sally B told you this, but we were doing a damn thing last week. I'm lucky I'm walking.
Here we go.
We did a superset of leg presses, squats. We did the ropes. It was pretty severe. It was pretty severe. Right. And you know, she being a female, I would say to her, "You're supposed to be the strongest sex," and it would embolden her. She couldn't handle that. I said, "Hey, you know, you can quit if you want, but you give birth. You're supposed to be stronger than me." God damn it, she did it. I'm just saying. All right, folks, enough of me just waxing. We got to do something about this obesity and these bad feet, Captain. I don't care. I'm putting it out there. Welcome to the Grindhouse, a.k.a. After the Radio. All right, speaking of hypocrisy, Russell Simmons. I'm looking at you, Russ. Russ. Didn't we, you know, we can't seem to leave Don Lemon alone. Can't seem to do it. But it looks like he's coming up smelling like roses. Because just to harken back to what we were discussing last week, ladies and gentlemen, you know, there's been an ongoing, I guess now, 3-week thing now between CNN, MSNBC, and Fox about black people. It's been going on. I don't really like to talk about black folk too much, even on this show. I like to talk about anecdotal data sometimes. I don't want to be the stereotypical black all the time. Because we're better than that. We could do more than that. We could do more than just talking about black pathology. But sometimes they call me back in. In this case, referencing last week, Don Lemon started it off by agreeing with Bill O'Reilly about the demise of the black family. If a black leader had said what Bill O'Reilly had said, it would have been a non-issue. Matter of fact, it has more resonance. It appears you have to have a white guy to say it because it actually holds, it's more glue-like. If you really think about it, if a black leader had said this, you would have said, "Oh, all right, whatever, another day." Bill O'Reilly tells you, When the pigment lightens and the person tells you that truth, because black folks get uncomfortable with it, Captain, it seems to stick. He said it. Don Lemon comes in. He co-signs on it. Can't do that. The Twitterverse, Facebookville, cyberspace, everybody went kablooey, kablam. Couldn't deal with it. So much so, Russell Simmons, noted hip-hop impresario, noted hip-hop mogul, he weighs in with an open letter to Don Lemon, telling him he's a slave, how wrong he is. Now, we played Don Lemon's response last week. I'm not going to reiterate it or repeat it, but now we're hearing, and I'm curious, I didn't hear anything from Don Lemon on this. Maybe he'll be classy and won't say anything. But I think you should throw some dirt over Russell Simmons right now. That's what I would do. While the iron is hot, I would throw some dirt over Russell Simmons now and completely make him irrelevant. Which he really has done it himself, but you need to do the pat-pat. You need to do the pat-pat on that dirt. That's what I would do. I would throw some more dirt over there. I said, "Hey, Russell, you're missing some dirt here." So now we're hearing that as part of some kind of skit. I think Russell Simmons has a YouTube presence. I think it might have been on his Global Grind website as well. He has some kind of I guess it's comedy. I guess it's comedy. A comedy skit portraying perhaps one of our greatest African-American heroes, heroines, Harriet Tubman, having relations with her master and putting out a sex tape in order to blackmail him. That's the humor. That's the depth. And that's the IndyCar race to the bottom, Captain, that we you and I talk about, that we supposedly are delusional. Our friends, I'm going to mention them by name because I don't do that much. Our friends, I say it in quotes, Jeremiah, who has been lighting up our Facebook as of late. He doesn't get it. I believe he believes that our message is a message that would be deleterious to the black community, would be damaging to the black community. And I would assume by extension, Don Lemon's message would be negative toward the black community. Somehow we bypass Russell Simmons. If we are bad for the black community, Captain, if we really are bad, what the hell is up with Russell Simmons' message then? What's his message? Expound on this for me, sir.
Nonsense, idiotacy. That appears to be his message at this given time. Lunacy. Within a full moon, hence that's where it comes from. Lunacy. He's a raving lunatic at this given point. Doesn't make any sense in any way, shape, or form. Don Lemon was definitely on point. The things that we say here, and you can't deconstruct it. When someone tells you to control your own space, go to high school, finish that up. Go get a bank account. Go get a driver's license. You know, little things that you can do. If you're sleeping with somebody as a male, put on a condom. You know, little things. I'm not telling you not to have sex. You have a penis. I won't tell you like how the Catholics would tell you and then do something else on the side. It's a whole other story. Just took a shot at them. That's the type of person I am anyway. But you have a penis, you're going to use it. Just look at what out of wedlock births spring. Now, I'm not also here to demonize those individuals that slip up and make a mistake. Things do happen. But I will demonize the 3 and 4 baby mama situation as a man. We know what that brings. And this is all what Don Lemon has said. Control the things that we can control. That's all. Russell Simmons, you can control this tape that you put out. It didn't make any sense. At this point in given time, what are you trying to do with that? You know, what are you trying to do at this given point? As an accomplished businessman, who is black, of course, what was going on? Funny, in this day and age, we've gotten to the point in the black community when something like this is really that funny? I don't think so. I don't think so at all. You know, it just didn't make any sense. Maybe you didn't take your medication that day. I don't know what was going on with that. I was taken aback from it. I was like, huh. I don't believe that. Some things you just have to leave alone. Harriet Tubman is not Kim Kardashian. Let me explain that and say that again. Harriet Tubman is not Kim Kardashian. All right? Two different things. And if you don't understand what I mean with that, Kim Kardashian claimed the fame, sex tape, you know, and also her father, you know, prominent lawyer and everything else. That was her claim to fame, reality star. That's what Kim Kardashian is. Harriet Tubman is not in that same lane. Not at all. Kim Kardashian is not in that same lane. Something entirely different. Oranges and apples. Some might say Harriet Tubman is the Bentley. And Kim Kardashian is just a souped-up Yugo right now. That's what some people might say. When you start to compare the two. So it doesn't make any sense at any given time. I just do not know what's going on, Sir Affleck. Back over to you.
Yeah, speaking of equipment usage, did you happen to see the the wardrobe malfunction of Tony Braxton.
Yes.
You know, I couldn't stop repeating that, Captain. I'm sorry. God bless her. You know, I don't know. Some are saying that she was fully aware of what she was doing and she's just trying to hold on. You know, I don't know what's happening now. I mean, I respect her. I do. I respect her, but at the same, I don't know about her sisters, though. Her sisters have fallen into the minstrel thing. So maybe I'm speaking too quickly. I don't know about I will separate her from her siblings because her siblings, they've jumped into the reality thing, and, you know, it appears money is tight and folks are willing to do the minstrel jig, obviously. They'll pay you for that. They won't pay you for respectful representation or a respectful interpretation of anything. Isn't that kind of funny, Captain, when we talk about this stuff? You know, CeeLo said this, that the hip-hop thing is tantamount to underachievement. And when they pay black folks, when they do pay you, they pay you for embarrassing yourself. That seems to be the only thing. The only thing, and no one seems to understand that this is like a pretty obvious thing. Anyway, I don't know what she was wearing. I don't know why she was wearing something so flimsy. But her backside was out for quite a bit. And I saw these people, you know, all the respondents, the commenters. They bring up her age. I think she's in the mid-40s. The woman is in terrific shape. I don't get this deal where they have to, like, if you did not know how old she was, you wouldn't make the comments. It's only because you know.
Mm-hmm.
The woman is, listen, I was probably surrounded by 20-somethings earlier today, and they were in lousy shape. They didn't look anywhere near this woman. But nevertheless, I would tell her to cover herself up, but if it didn't look so good, she needs to cover it up. I mean, just for, I don't know.
Well,
I couldn't stop looking at it.
Well, let me wax on about it a little bit.
Yeah, be careful.
It was rather impressive. It was rather impressive.
Yeah.
But
yes.
That's being truthful. But the point is, a Miss Braxton does at this given juncture in time. I don't think she really needs. Not really the best move to have your ass out. I really don't think so, because she does have some talent. She can sing. You look back in her catalog of records. She can sing. And people will come to a concert. She can wear something a little provocative. I just think that's over the top. I think a lot of times these singers, they always say, when you really can sing and do the thing, you do not really have to sell sex. This is what they say. This is what they actually do say. If you can really, really do the thing. But now here's the catch 22. As the great Afro Nerd says, they pay you more money for a striptease act. They do. They put you on a bigger tour. They promote your records more. This is what they do. So you're left with that balance. That's the problem here. That's the problem. You know? That's the problem. You go out and they say, okay, these shows here you get for $5,000. But if you're a striptease act, I can get you up to 40. What do you turn around and do now? You see, that's the problem now. That's the problem. That's what you're faced with when you're in the performance game. You know? That's just the thing. You know? But it was attractive. It was attractive.
Yeah.
It was very attractive.
Yeah. Well,
it
reminds me of Janet Jackson, too. You know, that infamous event with the
yes.
Super Bowl. And that's the first time you had the term wardrobe malfunction. It comes from her.
Yes.
And
yes.
that was a case of desperation.
Yes.
It was orchestrated. And all you could do is, if the talent was really there, why would you have to go to such an extent? But this is something that, as you said, actresses also. Everyone kind of goes provocative when the clock is ticking. You know, I don't know what to think about it. I mean, well, I know it was nice to look at, but at the end of the day, it's a little sloppy as far as the class is concerned. You know, Nancy Wilson, you're not going to see her have a wardrobe malfunction. I mean, she's probably 75, 76. So, but people will still pay to see her at advanced age because she can do it. She can really do it. So the talent is there, so will the checks, I think. All right. I want to segue. I want to play an urban alternative groove in a moment, but I do want to segue to Cal Penn. Did you get this email, Captain? I sent you something.
Of course.
Racialicious. And I have to admit, I like the Racialicious blog. Again, folks, you might want to check out Racialicious. It's a progressive blog, though. Listen, I'm open-minded when it comes to reading all kinds of things. I don't just read everything conservative because I see the glitches. It's almost having a preternatural vision. It's like looking at the Matrix. You know, the Matrix, you see all the diodes and all the equations. I feel that's what I have to do when I'm looking at progressive and conservative talk or literature. When you read something from whatever perspective they're coming from, you start to see the glitches. So I see the glitches with both bents. And at this time, when they were talking about Cal Penn, now Cal Penn is a respected actor. He was on House. He's probably most notable for Harold and Kumar. He's taught at the University of Pennsylvania. He's worked in the Obama administration. I mean, he got a lot of respect because he's still a relatively young man. He's 36 years old. And he left acting for a bit because he was emboldened through the election of Barack Obama. But obviously, when it comes to people of color, you cannot have independent thought. And I see that full and well, Captain. And that's the glitch that I saw with how he was treated on Racialicious. Someone wrote an open letter to him because I believe he tweeted out something about his problems with stop and frisk. In other words, he pretty much probably feels like the way I did, that it was a successful policy with problems, but because he's brown and because he's aligned with the Obama administration and because he's an actor in a liberal industry, someone felt that they had to write him a letter because he had a difference of opinion. I'm going to look for a groove quickly, Captain. What's your thoughts on that? Do you think there's a problem with people having to write you a letter when you're a opinion? Look what they did with Don Lemon. Don Lemon had a thought. Now someone has to write him a letter. You're supposed to be thinking this way, not that way. What's up with that?
We get letters. We get letters. Most of the time they agree with us, but sometimes they disagree. You have the right. We agree to disagree. This is not a problem. See, I don't get so emotionally caught up by these individuals where I feel I have to type this long college-level essay for these individuals. I don't have time to do that, to tell you the truth. I don't have the time, really, to do that, you know? It is an opinion in millions of opinions, sometimes billions of opinions. But we also know that some people's opinion count more than others. Normally, the people who are very critical and not cowardly, their opinions will count a lot. But at the end of the day, it's still an opinion. You know? If he feels that, you know, stop and frisk is effective, that's it. He's entitled to that. There's all the stats and statistics, what it really is and what it worked out to be and what the Constitution is. You know that. There you go. Yeah. I'm not writing him anything. Now, speaking of that, stop and frisk just briefly, I said a year and a half ago that it was illegal based on the constitutional rights. That's it. That's what it came down to me, because I do not get so emotional. I just look at the facts. That's all I do. Emotion defies your ability to reason. Let me repeat that. Emotion defies your ability to reason, but it's a catch-22 because human beings are known as emotional beings. That's what we are. So we have to be able to balance emotion in order to get concise, precise decision-making. This is why they say, as per rule, not all the time, but as per rule, men will usually make better decisions than women in leadership situations.
This is what why they say this, because women are naturally more emotional. That does not mean a woman cannot be a leader. Just means she needs to understand her emotional side a lot more. That's all. That's all what it comes down to. So you're allowed to have your own opinions, because ultimately at the end of the day, it's just an opinion. That's what makes you you. That's what makes me me. That's what makes Afro-Nerd Afro-Nerd. There's no reason to go in and say, I have to write you a letter because I'm getting all emotional. Back over right, to you, sir, Afro-Nerd.
Let's go to a quick groove. This is why I really have a great deal of respect for our audience. I see that Kim from Chi-Town, from Chi-Rack, I say that affectionately, of course, but Chi-Rack is Chi-Rack. She has a blurb about Russell Simmons. I guess he's trying to sell his YouTube presence for $117 million. He says that Sergio's site, Shadow and Act, has an article about this whole deal. So I'm going to have to definitely jettison over there to see what the hell is going on. So he can do that? I mean, you can set up your own YouTube presence, because YouTube is its own entity. So you mean to tell me that you can make money off of YouTube that way? I mean, there's a way to make money off YouTube. I know that, but for him to sell for, well, you know what? Without further ado, I'm going to go to a groove, and then I'll research that myself. But I find that fascinating, not shocking. So that's why he was doing. Well, listen, it makes sense for why he would disrespect Harriet Tubman then.
So he's the real sellout then.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? But
yeah,
that's what it's the old shell game, Captain.
Yeah.
It's the shell game. While he's screaming at Don Lemon, you're not looking what's going on under his shell to his left.
Mm-hmm.
It's the perfect ruse. Perfect. All right. More urban alternative groove. I mentioned this young lady before. I dig what she's doing. This is Valerie June. Watch out for her. I think she might be at Afropunk, but I think her name is, she's being talked about quite a bit for her bluesy type of music. So I guess I would consider it new blues, maybe neo blues. It's blues. Anyway, Valerie June, You Can't Be Told. You Can't Be Told. Boy, do I know it. We'll be right back, folks, in a game. Let's groove.
No.
You know, folks, we try to give you the best of urban alternative music. That was Valerie June. Look out for her. That was You Can't Be Told. And that's says it all, doesn't it? When we say what we say, when Don Lemon says what he says, when Juan Williams and Dr. Cosby say what they say, you can't be told. So that might be a really appropriate title, more so than one would think. Folks, this is Afternerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afternerd Radio. The lines are open. Feel free to give us a buzz. This is 646-915-9620. Again, the number is 646-915-9620. We were talking about actor Cal Penn and this open letter written by a blogger, Bridget Todd, actually, guest contributor to Racialicious. And it was an open letter to Mr. Cal Penn. And she liked Cal Penn. That's a lot of things going on with this when you really read into what she's saying. First of all, she likes the guy. She likes maybe him, maybe his presence, his abilities, him. And if someone does something that you like, that something that disappoints you, someone who's a little crazy must interject and tell them, I'm disappointed in you because you're not what I wanted you to be. And that's problematic. I think I've gotten a couple of letters like that, Captain. You guys are so good at it, but you did this, and I didn't like you. Oh, this is a problem for me. This is one issue. This is one issue, and I'm going to read a little bit of this open letter.
Hold on. You're supposed to also – you are supposed to be shorter because of your bent. That's another
one.
Yeah,
sure,
you disappoint people. Your perspective, you're not supposed to be that tall because of your perspective. No. This guy's supposed to be 5'4". He's 5'4", wears glasses, and he got beat up a lot. He's that guy.
That's not the case. I'm not a fighter, but I was always quick-witted and tall. So...
Okay.
You're right about that. I think it makes you more,
absolutely.
It might make them more comfortable if I was more of a mite. If I was a short mite type person, then, let me read this from Racialicious. It says, Dear Cal Penn Suresh Modi, which is his entire name. See, that's when you know you're in trouble. when they recite your entire name. The guy goes by Cal Penn. You're calling him Cal Penn Suresh Modi. I have been a big fan of yours for some time. Even though I don't know you, you always struck me as someone who was thoughtful about race. When I heard your stage name, Cal Penn, really came from your wanting to see if white casting directors would be more responsive to Cal than to Cal Peen, I found it was so hilariously insightful that I couldn't help but become a fan. For whatever reason, I assume you and I were similar, but on Tuesday, when you tweeted that you were supportive of Stop and Frisk, I knew we weren't as similar as I once assumed. We had a brief back and forth about the policy on Twitter, and while I appreciated you taking the time to share your thoughts, 140 characters isn't enough space to adequately tell you misinformed you really are on Stop and Frisk. When writer Christopher Williams pointed out to you that Stop and Frisk allows black and brown men to be routinely hassled by law enforcement, you responded that the stats don't lie when it comes to who is committing violent crime in New York City, meaning that you believe that since it is black and brown folk committing the violent crime, they should be stopped, they should be being stopped, searched, and questioned. I have to ask, have you read those stats? Because they indicate that it is white men, not black or Latino men, who are more likely to be carrying a weapon when stopped and frisked. Yet black and brown men are much more likely to be stopped and frisked than their white counterparts. You see, people are framing the argument the way they want to frame it, as opposed to this is the truth and this is how you deal with it. Having a gun is different than the community that's committing the crimes. They're trying to deal with crimes. I don't know. Captain, I'm not going to go into this that deeply. What are your thoughts on what she's saying here and how she's treating him? He can't have the thoughts that he has.
He is allowed to have his own opinion. That's it. He's allowed to have an opinion. Now, if we want to debate stop and frisk, that's a whole other thing. But he's, regardless whatever the debate is, and I can prove it both sides, you know, I'll destroy most people when it comes to that because I'll do it unemotionally. I'll come with all the facts and break it down what it is and what it's not based on your Bill of Rights. But that's not what this is about. This is about this individual allowed to have a difference, a difference in opinion. And just as the great Afro Nerd said, people of color are supposed to have a unimind. We are Borg. And when you step outside of the Borg element, the uninitiated Borg is dealing with Star Trek. They had a unimind. And, you know, they react in that manner. You, if you step out of that Borg type of element, you have to be reprimanded. That's what we're dealing with, which doesn't make any sense because everyone's an individual at the end of the day. You might be conservative. I might be independent. You know, there you go. That's what makes the world go around. Variety is the spice of life. That's all. Back over to you, Seraphim.
Yeah, you know, we're going to move on to the next topic, but I guess my issue is, and I've dealt with it personally, obviously, is this, you know, I've even dealt with it on air on other folks' talk shows where I can tell that the person I'm speaking with has a problem because I'm black and I'm thinking the way that I'm thinking, especially with Shauna Renee on Coco Mode. She appears to be coming around more now because we're not talking out of our butts. You know, we are bringing up facts and we're making it where you're going to have to deconstruct an argument. You can't, like you just said, it can't always be about emotionalism. If you take on things emotionally, then there's no room for deconstruction. You got to be able, you can be angry all you want or sad or cry, but it doesn't change the situation. It's not changing the situation where we're seeing young brown and black men chasing each other, underage folk chasing each other with guns and killing them. And the numbers are not lying. Now, she wants to talk about the likelihood of a white person having a gun. Okay, I can understand that. But that's different than the actual criminal acts. Now, we were seeing more white guys statistically shooting each other in the street in a tribal fashion, the way black and brown men are doing, then they have a point. And that's not to say that's not happening, but it's not happening to such a numerical degree. We are so way above the grid that folks are going to, there has to be some kind of reaction. You speak to someone like Kim from Chicago, and what's happening in Chicago, I think Chicago now has the number one distinction now as far as murder rate, I believe. But there have been other cities over the years. It's been Richmond at one time. It's been St. Louis at one time. It's been New York at one time. It's been Camden. It's been different areas where it's been chaotic and almost warlike. Those situations have to be dealt with. And again, we're talking about stop and frisk being applied to high crime rate areas. We're talking about a specific area dealing with crime that's so rampant that they can't even get mail delivered. You can look that up as well. Look up to our audience. Simply look up East New York or Brownsville and the mail deliverers being afraid to deliver mail in the daytime because these neighborhoods are so dangerous. I mean, it is what it is. I just find it fascinating that this person has to write an open letter because, well, you know, you're a nice guy and you're a minority and you work for President Obama. You really shouldn't be thinking that way. I'm not comfortable with you thinking that way. When I mentioned the concept of profiling, where I have a certain belief on what a profile is and that a profile really encompasses life, when you date someone, you are profiling them, or else you'll date anyone. I mean, especially when I saw this afternoon, I'm supposed to ignore obesity and tattoos and bad feet. That was my profiling moment. I'm supposed to ignore that, Captain. I'm supposed to be no, as if it's lunacy. Why do you bother to draft up resumes, dossiers? Why bother? Because you could just walk in and be who you are, and the next of the day. People aren't supposed to scrutinize you. Profiling is an aspect of life. But when I talk this way to other talk show hosts, I can feel over the phone or feel in the studio, you're not, you know, I don't, you're black. Why do you think this way? Wow. That's it. All right, on to the next topic. I want to go into an anecdote, actually. The anecdote is something we started recently, ladies and gentlemen. Just as we have the Blue Area segment of our show, where we talk about all the positive accolades and positive accomplishments, mostly for people of color, but it doesn't always have to be that way. We have our Blue Area segments, and we also have our anecdote, where we just mention just things that are just informational, not really meant to have a particular bent, but just information. Recently, did you see this, Captain, where they found a 8th grade exam from 1912?
Absolutely.
I believe it's in the Kentucky Museum. The questions, but just the level, the educational level seemed to be beyond 8th grade by today's standards. It amazed me as to what an 8th grader was expected to know 100 years ago. And I don't think, well, first of all, I think they went on the street with this thing. And adults and children alike did horribly with this test. And I've seen this before. I've seen other exams dating back to, let's say, the late 1800s, you know, the 19th century, the latter part of the 19th century. This was a 20th century exam. But I've seen exams of the 19th century that were, you know, kind of difficult. Have things gotten easier, or why do you think that is? What's up with these questions? I mean, the things that you were expected to know 100 years ago, I don't know if we're being asked the same question.
Well, you have to understand something. The advent of the computer has changed a lot. It's changed a lot. And I've always said this, it's made you stupid. If you went to school in the 70s and the 80s, when you did mathematics, you weren't allowed to use the calculator, man. You had to show all the work. And my teachers always told me, they said, there's a link with your hand to the paper back to your mind. There's a definite link. You do not have the same link with the computer when you're punching the keys. You do not. You don't. I've tried it. I said, let me write something 10 times each versus punching it in 10 times. I forget it 10 times. But if I write it 10 times, it's in my brain, 10 times each. Those of you who went to school in the 70s and 80s, you know what I'm talking about with that. Write this 10 times each in order to memorize it. It goes right in into your hippocampus, the memory part of your brain. It goes right in. So I think computers have pulled away a lot of our intelligence, believe it or not. I think that has a lot to do with it. And just overall, the way society has moved, there's other things behind it. Because if you look at 1912, going back, bringing it to circa 2013, you were not a wage slave zombie in 1912. You knew pretty much what was going on. Your knowledge base was a lot higher. People, at the end of the day, are easier to control when they don't know as much, in general. So that's what they are. So you have to tune in to MSNBC, Fox News, to know what's going on. You have to look to authority more so now than you would have to do in 1912. You control more of your space better in 1912 than you do now. Someone is helping you control your own space. Most of us cannot survive
if the supermarket went down for like a week or two? Do you know how to go hunt and do all the other type of things? If you broke your own leg, do you know how to set the bone back? In 1912, a lot of people just walking around. They might not have necessarily been doctors. They knew how to do these things. So we have regressed. And I think it has a lot to do with the powers that be. This is something they wanted to bring about because it makes the people easier to control. That's just my opinion, and that's all it is. But, you know, you're not allowed to have opinions. You're supposed to have a unimind. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Well, you know, you kind of hinted on something, Captain, that we talk about this really on the comic shop, but in cinema, in dystopic portrayals, you know, Hollywood plays around with this whole thing that if the lights go out, what is the name of that NBC series? I think it's called Revolution.
Yes.
Where the society has changed greatly because some massive event occurs and electricity is completely gone. The power, the way that we power ourselves, everything is gone. So you're literally living like it's 1740. And you see people, you know, people go get feral very quickly. But you bring up something very interesting that we weren't so heavily reliant on machinery. I mean, now you have to have a TV, you have to have a car, you have to have refrigeration. I mean, these things that we just are expected to have. And there are certain regions beyond the Western culture that live the way that we used to live 300 or 400 years ago. And if something happens, because we toy around with the idea of dystopia all the time, we toy around with it. If something happens, we probably would not make it. And as you just said, we used to be able to do the computations on in our heads or on paper. You had to do them physically, the computations. Now we rely on computers. They're working on trying to make us to be, and we talked about this before, akin to cyborgs. We're already kind of cyborgs as it is.
Mm-hmm.
We're already en route to being a cyborg. And they're looking to have it where you could probably wear contact lenses that are computers. They already have the Google glasses. That's we're going there where internally you could just look up and you'll see in your mind's eye, you know, excuse me, you'll be plugged in. You just look up in your head as if you're downloaded into a PC. I think we're working on that. Captain, you know, are you still in the system? Are you in on the boards?
Yes.
Okay, because I'm frozen. So you're going to have to send us out, I think. We got about, 4 minutes remaining?
Okay.
Wow. Matter of fact, if you could put Rag-A-Dub as an outro, people seem to dig that song. I got some tweets on that. Ragga, just put in R-A-G-G-A, Ragga, as the outro music. One other anecdote, and this might have an opinion attached to it. I think it's just interesting. I'm going to break my own vow about not having an opinion attached to an anecdotal thing. This is something that happened sometime last year, a year and a half ago, and I happened to revisit. Actually, it's a twofold issue, and I'll be very brief about it because we only got about 3 minutes or what have you. One, we mentioned, and this could be an anecdote, of course, that there's such a thing as the reverse perm. The reverse perm. Now, you know, a conventional perm would be for your hair, if it's naturally curly, to make it straight. But in Korea, there was a fashion thing where Koreans who have naturally curly hair, I'm sorry, naturally straight hair.
My board is frozen.
It's frozen?
Yes.
Oh, great. And I can't move either. Anyway, I know we're still broadcasting, but for some reason I can't get anything. Anyway, with the reverse perm, it was a penchant among Korean folks, some Koreans, fashionable Koreans, where when you saw them, their hair looked Africoid. They just liked the look of Africoid hair, of kinky, curly hair. They like that look. And it's funny how the paradigm changes, that if the world were different, people would look to make their hair look more like African hair as normal, as opposed to what we do now by straightening it to look more Caucasian. So I found that interesting. Now, the opinion part of it is that there was a white woman, I believe in New York, that wore an Afro wig as some kind of goof, maybe for some kind of Halloween thing, and she actually liked it. So she didn't wear it as a goof. She liked it to the point where she started wearing it regularly. And it caused a problem with some black women, Captain. So you know where I'm going with this.
Yes.
Can a black woman, does she have the authority to critique a white woman for wearing an Afro hair hat when black women wear Caucasian hair hats as routine? I just want to throw it out there. Something, food for thought.
Well, it's an opinion, so she's given her opinion. So I guess she does have an authority. But some would say otherwise. I think I'm up now. I think I'm actually up.
Good. We got about a minute, right, Captain? We
might
as well close
it out here. 10 seconds.
Oh,
10
Jesus.
Seconds.
Folks, it's been real. We'll do it again Wednesday. Always a pleasure. Captain, send us out.
Swing and shaking like a flower child.